I wrote yes and put it under his door. I couldn't bear not to. And, of course, it was true in a way. I did forgive him. Of course, the honest thing would be to tell him it will never be any good, but even if I could bear to hurt him so, I doubt if I could convince him without owning that I care for someone else, because I certainly showed every sign of its being some good while he was making love to me. Oh, why did I let him? Let him? You encouraged him, my girl. But why? Why, when my whole heart was longing for Simon? While we were at tea, a telegram came for Stephen from Leda Fox Cotton. She wants him to go up to London next weekend. So he went back to the farm to ask if they could spare him on Saturday morning. As soon as he had gone out, I turned off his wireless and went upstairs to play Simon's. I never play it when Stephen is in the house. Thomas came too, and asked me to put the Bach preludes and fugues on the gramophone. He particularly likes them. We lay on the beds, listening companionably. After we had played the Bach records, he suddenly said, "Do you remember Rose wishing on the stone head?" I asked what on earth had made him think of that. "Oh, listening to Simon's gramophone, I suppose. It's part of the difference the Cottons have made to our lives. It never struck me before that Rose wanted to sell herself to the devil, wished, and then in they walked." I stared at him. "But Rose isn't selling herself. She's in love with Simon. She told me so, and you know she never lies." "That's true," said Thomas. "Then perhaps she managed to kid herself, because I know she isn't in love, and she's all wrong for Simon." "But how can you possibly know that she isn't in love?" "Well, for one thing, she hardly ever mentions Simon. Do you know that in the letter I had from her, there isn't one word about Simon?" "When did you have a letter?" I asked. "Can I see it?" It was a most peculiar letter. There was certainly nothing about Simon in it, but there was nothing about anyone else. Not even Rose herself, really. It was just one enormous list of things that had been bought for her and how much everything cost. "And I bet I know why she made that list," said Thomas. "It was to convince herself that marrying for money is worth it. Anyway, it's a godsend for us, all right, even if it's a bit of a devil send for Rose." "And what about Simon?" I demanded. "Simon? Oh, he's past help. Do you remember our last visit to Scotney, before they all went up to London? He mentioned Rose's name 42 times while we were walking round the stables. I counted." I told him he hadn't any real evidence about Rose's feelings, but a wild hope was rising in my heart. For surely it is strange that there is nothing about Simon in her letter. I have just decided what to do. Somehow I have got to find out the truth. If Rose really loves him, I will never try to take him from her, even in my thoughts. I will go away, perhaps to college, but I must know the truth. I must see her. I will go to London with Stephen on Saturday. I am back. It wasn't any good. Nothing will ever be the same again between Rose and me. Being alone with Stephen was far less difficult than I had expected. While we were waiting at the station, Heloise arrived, exhausted, having eluded Thomas and raced after our bicycles. So we got her a dog ticket. Stephen insisted on escorting me all the way to Park Lane. We arranged to telephone each other about what train we would go home by, and then he dashed off to St. John's Wood. I walked Heloise round the block of flats, then went in. I asked for Rose and told the maid who I was. "They're all out," she said. I suddenly realized I ought to have let them know I was coming. "When will they be back, please?" I asked. "Madam said 6:30, in time to dress for dinner. Will you come in, miss?"